Mr. Belasis? Ms. Belasis, sorry.
Thank you, Your Honor. Vilia Belasis for the defendant, Martin Avila. May it please the court. The indictment...
Avila is how you pronounce his name?
I'm sorry?
Avila, not Avila?
I believe it's Avila.
Avila.
The indictment in this case charged eight individuals together with a number of others conspired to distribute large quantities of methamphetamine, marijuana, and cocaine. Charged that the sources of this of these drugs were Mexico, Texas, and Illinois. The endpoints were Indianapolis, Columbus, and Terre Haute, Indiana, and that the drug dealers used cell phones, pagers, code words, and hidden compartments in cars. The evidence consisted of this conspiracy consisted largely of the investigating agent, Agent Burkhardt, testifying that she was involved in a large-scale narcotics investigation and identified photographs of certain individuals as being participants in this investigation. She clarified that someone had given her this information, although she had worked on this investigation, that someone had told her that these were the individuals who were part of the investigation. There was also 8,000 telephone calls that had been recorded that were placed into evidence. However, only 17 of these were published to the jury. The rest of them were published to the jury in terms of photographs of the boxes containing the tapes. There was no testimony explaining what these phone calls consisted of or what the contents of the phone calls were, how many of them were regarding drug deals, and how many were not. So the evidence of the conspiracy focused simply on the dealings of Mr. Avila with two other people who had not been charged but were named in the indictment. This evidence was insufficient to prove that such a large conspiracy existed. And the evidence that was presented was highly prejudicial in nature in that it consisted, the evidence of the large conspiracy consisted solely of the agent's opinion testimony based on facts that were not presented to the jury.
You mean because there wasn't a sufficient description of the extended operation?
That's correct, Your Honor. There was testimony that there were hundreds of pounds of marijuana seized, but there was no indication who they were seized from, when they were seized, and what these, how these seizures were connected with the defendant in this case, or his dealings. There was testimony that there was testimony by an undercover agent of several undercover transactions. None of those transactions were connected up in any way during this trial to the defendant, to Mr. Avila. They were connected up to someone else. However, it didn't show that the evidence did not show the large-scale conspiracy or that, in fact, this defendant was a participant of this conspiracy. The evidence did show some fronting of drugs, which was one of the factors to indicate a conspiracy, as well as the fact that the defendant was participating in drug deals with a couple of specified individuals over a period of time. However, there were no other factors showing any interdependence. In fact, the evidence showed that they were, in fact, competitors as much as they were cooperating together. Every time, in every transaction that was discussed, there was a renegotiation of price. So there was neither a single unit that was operating here, nor was there the kind of interdependence that is necessary for a conspiracy.
What was it with such a large quantity over an extended period of time. What does that indicate? Doesn't that show that there's got to be a lot of people involved in subsequent sales, along with all this fronting? And
well, Your Honor, what it shows is that there's a lot of drug dealing in the Southern District of Indiana.
Yeah, but just with these folks.
But there's no indication that it was these folks. We don't know where the seizures came from. There was no relation. There was the government did not show any evidence that would relate these seizures to anyone in particular. So we don't know who it was. They just testified that this was a big drug investigation. And that's the kind of evidence that is very prejudicial. When an investigator testifies to facts that are not before the jury, indicating that the investigators know something that has not been disclosed to the jury. Also, two of the cooperating witnesses who had pled guilty testified that they, in fact, participated in this conspiracy with this defendant. Again, that's a legal conclusion, and that's improper. They testified to some dealings, that they had drug dealings with this defendant, but they did not testify about any kind of large overarching conspiracy over any kind of an enterprise that would be ongoing or any type of interdependence that would have been going on. They testified about their own dealings with this person and his nephew. Again, the undercover agent did not relate these purchases to the defendant or to the charged conspiracy. In the government's brief, the prosecution states that these deals were certainly reasonably foreseeable and in furtherance of the conspiracy, but does not explain how this would be foreseeable to the defendant or how it was in furtherance of the conspiracy, because in nowhere was the defendant mentioned regarding these undercover transactions. There was an expert who testified about hidden compartments, but his testimony consisted of showing the jury three different hidden compartments that he had seen in the course of his career as a law enforcement officer and stating that these are the kind of compartments that are used by drug cartels.
Wasn't there a telephone call which was that involve your client or not, involving the hidden compartments?
Yes. Yes, there was. However, there was no discussion of what type of compartment it was. There was an indication that it was a large one, but there was nothing to relate the compartment that was discussed with any of the photographs or any of the testimony that the expert testified to.
Well, he said he'd previously used to transport 32 pounds of drugs, right?
That's correct. In short, five of the government's witnesses gave impermissible evidence regarding drug trafficking. Four of them gave legal opinions that the defendant was guilty. Reversal is required to prevent a miscarriage of justice and to preserve the fairness, integrity, and public reputation of judicial proceedings.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Jones. Mr. Glickman.
May it please the Court, good morning. In referring to the government's case that was put on, Chief Judge Hamilton at the sentencing of this case indicated that the government put on a concise, devastating, and overwhelming case of the defendant's guilt. With respect to the sufficiency of the evidence, there was an overwhelming amount of evidence that there was a conspiracy, that the defendant, Martin Avila, was a member of this conspiracy, and that he intentionally joined this conspiracy. The evidence at trial was uncontroverted. It was that Avila was the Chicago, Illinois-based source of supply of methamphetamine, cocaine, and marijuana to various individuals in the Indianapolis, Indiana area, including Rene Navarubio and Wilbert Avant, who testified at trial for the government against Mr. Avila. Additionally, there was uncontroverted evidence that Mr. Avila utilized his nephew, Hilario Espinoza Sarco, who is also known as Ladio or Lio, who is named in the indictment, as an individual to transport large amounts of drugs from Chicago to Indianapolis and to collect money on his behalf. Not only was there the testimony of Mr. Navarubio and Mr. Avant at trial, but there was wiretap evidence that was introduced in which Mr. Avila, it was uncontroverted that he was a participant in these telephone calls which were intercepted, speaking to Rene Navarubio about various things having to do with the conspiracy, including the fact that his nephew, Espinoza Sarco, could be given money for previously fronted drugs that Navarubio was selling. This conspiracy had all the hallmarks that this court looks to for a conspiracy. There was fronting of large amounts of drugs. That in and of itself would not be sufficient to make a conspiracy. However, the testimony at trial, which was uncontroverted, was that Martin Avila fronted Rene Navarubio over 100 pounds of methamphetamine, 20 to 30 kilograms of cocaine, 300 to 400 pounds of marijuana during the charged conspiracy. The uncontroverted evidence was also that Mr. Avila fronted Wilbur Avant 4 pounds of methamphetamine per month during a course of the charged conspiracy, 5 to 6 kilograms of cocaine per month, and 500 pounds of marijuana. The drug dealings between Mr. Avila and Mr. Navarubio and Avant were always done on a consignment or a fronted basis. Mr. Avila would front them the drugs. They would then sell the drugs and then get the money back to Mr. Avila in Chicago, oftentimes through the nephew, Espinoza Sarco. Additionally, there was other evidence introduced at trial that would show the overwhelming nature of the conspiracy, that in the form of testimony from Rene Navarubio, that he knew Martin Avila from Michoacan, Mexico, and that at some point before the conspiracy began, Mr. Avila asked Mr. Navarubio to sell drugs for him in Indiana. Additionally, there was testimony from Mr. Navarubio that Mr. Avila fronted him drugs, some of which he sold himself, others of which he stored, and that sometimes Mr. Avila would come down to Indiana and sell the drugs that Mr. Navarubio was storing for him. So,
How old is he?
Mr. Avila?
Yeah.
Mr. Avila, I believe, was 38 years old at the time he was sentenced, Your Honor.
Doesn't 33 years seem rather a heavy sentence?
Well, Judge Hamilton didn't think so, Your Honor, and here's why. Judge Hamilton, in addition to, and I'll touch on the sentencing guideline issues in a moment, but here's what Judge Hamilton found after analyzing the 3553A factors. Judge Hamilton found that Avila supplied huge quantities of methamphetamine and cocaine, that he had a significant criminal history, and along those lines, the convictions that Mr. Avila had previously suffered, the first two actually were from out in Denver, Colorado. One was a drug felony, the other was a drug misdemeanor. The third conviction that Mr. Avila suffered was from Cook County, Illinois, where he was convicted of criminal sexual abuse of a victim under 18 years of age. Judge Hamilton also found that Mr. Avila had no respect for the law or judicial decisions in that he committed these crimes while he was illegally in the United States, deported, and continually came back to commit more crimes. Judge Hamilton cited the need to protect the public from further crimes of Mr. Avila, and Judge Hamilton noted that Mr. Avila did not show this, quote, the slightest remorse.
He's not a citizen?
He is not.
So he's going to be deported at the end of his...
I don't want to presume.
So the taxpayer is going to spend an enormous amount of time to incarcerate him for 33 years, and then he'll be deported. Why don't we deport him now? Save some money.
Let me answer that question by saying this, Your Honor. That decision is above my pay grade as to whether he is, when he is deported, and
I don't know. The Justice Department certainly has a heavy participation in the sentencing process through its charging policy and through what it It's plea negotiations and what it tells the judge. So I think the Justice Department would have some view. I mean, realize you want to deter these people, so you want heavy sentences, but 33 years followed by deportation is a pretty expensive sanction.
Perhaps so, Your Honor, but the problem is this. Each and every time Mr. Avila was convicted of a felony offense, or indeed any offense, he was always deported, and he always came back. And I think that that factored into Judge Hamilton's decision to give a sentence which was within the guidelines of 396 months or 33 years. With respect to the sentence that was imposed, I would respectfully suggest to the court that with respect to Mr. Avila's criminal history, it was correctly calculated. He was sentenced on the criminal sexual abuse of a victim under 18 years of age to 2 years of custody, given 3 criminal history points for that. And then the two Denver, Colorado drug convictions, which I would point out to the court, he was arrested on different days for, but sentenced on the same day. In one case, he was given 6 months custody. And then in the other case, he was given 2 years of custody, which was suspended upon the completion of the sentence in that case where he got 6 months custody. Counsel for Mr. Avila on appeal argues for the first time that this was improperly determined and that he should not have received any criminal history points for one of those sentences. However, I would respectfully suggest to the court that they were scored correctly. He did receive 2 criminal history category points for each of those for a total of 7, unlike what counsel for Mr. Avila has tried to persuade the court, that one of the convictions was not totally suspended. 7 criminal history points gives a criminal history category of 4. And finally, the last thing I want to touch on with the sentence was the base offense level. And as I pointed out in the government's brief in this case, while the base offense level of 38 was correct, the numbers that were used to arrive at that were not. Mr. Avila did not lodge an objection before the district court, but I would respectfully suggest that based on the amount of drugs that Mr. Avila fronted to Rene Navarubio and Wilbert Avant at trial, there was more than enough to make for a level 38.
What was the mistake the judge made? I didn't understand that.
I don't believe that Judge Hamilton made a mistake. The right base offense level was arrived at, but the numbers that he used that were in the pre-sentence report, which I'll be quite frank with the court, I should have caught but didn't. I suppose, more concerned with what the base offense level was, and it seemed relatively obvious that the base offense level was 38 based on the amount of drugs that were testified to at trial. As I said, based on the testimony of Rene Navarubio and Wilbert Avant, more than enough drugs to make it to a level 38. The sentence that the court gave was a guideline sentence. It was 396 months. The guidelines were 324 to 405 months. And for the reasons that I argued earlier, I would respectfully suggest it was reasonable.
The PSR report had some incorrect numbers in it?
Yes, sir. Yes, Your Honor.
At paragraphs 13 and 14?
13 and 14, I believe, were correct. The incorrect part, and I apologize, I don't have the paragraph number before me, was the amount of drugs, the amount of cocaine, marijuana, and methamphetamine used to come to a base offense level 38. If you add it up in the pre-sentence report, it only came to a level 36. But, again, those were – there's – Let me say that there was enough in the record and at trial for the court to have found that level 38 was correct. I appreciate the court's time this morning, and I'd respectfully ask the court to affirm the judgments of the district court and the defendant's conviction and sentence. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Glickman. Ms. Belazes, how much time does she have? Minutes?
2 minutes. I just wanted to address 2 points raised by counsel. One was regarding the sentence. When a sentence is suspended completely, that should count for one point and not two. Here, there was no indication that the sentences were to run concurrently and then the remaining portion of the sentence should be suspended. All it said was that the documentation provided was that the defendant was to serve the first sentence, which was 6 months, and the second sentence of 2 years was to be suspended. So that's an error. The points should have been seven, I believe, or six instead of seven, which would make it a Category 3, and that would lower the sentencing guidelines. Also, the marijuana equivalency weight was 24,234 kilograms, and that was what everyone agreed to, and that's what the number that the judge used. He simply picked the wrong number in the sentencing guideline. He picked 38 instead of level 36, and those two factors would make the sentencing guideline significantly lower. Also, I just wanted to make a final point that the testimony by the agent that this is a huge conspiracy and the defendant is a part of it, and the introduction of photographs of boxes of tapes may be a concise way to prove up a conspiracy, but it's an improper one, and it is highly prejudicial. And I would ask this Court to reverse Mr. Avila's conviction sentence. Thank you.
Hey, thank you, Ms. Galatis. And you were appointed, were you not? So we thank you for accepting the appointment and your efforts on behalf of your client.